Welcome to the Life Talk Show, sharing ideas for meaning, joy, and success with Randy Kay, Diana Hall, and Nikki Tombolides. Our mission is to initiate conversations that enrich and empower your life. And now, today's Life Talk Show.
And our topic today is very interesting and has a lot to do with our pocketbook. It is the psychology of ads, or do I really need that? And in a moment, we will be joined by our guest, Dr. David G. Taylor, who is a marketing professor at Sacred Heart University. Hello, girls.
Hi, Randy. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you? So,
great.
I've just went this week to Goodwill. And was very, very, whenever my life feels cluttered, I just fill a couple of plastic bags with stuff. And I bring it to Goodwill. And sometimes I look at what's in the bag and I go, why did I buy that in the first place? What was I thinking? Although if I've had years of pleasure out of it, that's great. But sometimes things, you just know they're going to be in the tag sale in 6 months. So my question to you guys to begin, because we are bombarded every day by more and more advertising than ever before. I'm sure our professor will have statistics for us. All I know is that if it's 2 a.m. and I turn on the television, I can't find a show. All I find are ads, and they're all telling us to buy stuff. So tell me an example of the last thing or a couple of things you bought and why you think you bought it. Did advertising have anything to do with it?
Well, Randy, I did the same thing you did this week with the Goodwill bag. Every season, change of season with the weather, I switch out closets because I don't have the luxury of a big closet that can hold all of my seasonal clothing. And so I go through and I pull out the things that I just don't like, I'm not wearing, are cluttering my closet, and I put them in a bag and send them off to Goodwill. So I actually
did that.
And
what branch is that? Because I might want your cast-offs. No, I'm kidding.
I'll just lug them in for you. Then I won't feel so guilty because, and I know that, you know, of course they go to a very good cause, but I do feel guilty purging of my things that maybe I haven't really worn quite often. And if my dad's listening, you know, I apologize, but they say when you plant corn, you get corn. And my father is a shopper and an impulse shopper at that.
Oh, okay.
And he loves, can I advertise?
Sure.
Job Lot or Odd Job, you know, that big Job Lot store. He loves that store.
Okay. They have this store that they have all kinds of
Clothing, food, housewares, lots of, you know,
like
stuff.
Like they sell stuff with a pound, no?
Yeah. Just lots of just knick-knacky things, lots of what you don't need, but you walk in and you spend a lot of money on things you don't need. So with that said, I cleaned out my closet, and one of those things, I love boots. All right, so you two know that I'm a shoe addict. You know, me and Imelda, we're in the running for shoes.
Okay, how many pairs of shoes do you own?
You're going to make me admit that on the
yes,
air?
Yes, I am. That's
really?
Well, celebrity. All right, so your dad, what does your dad buy? I mean, he likes, what did you say? He likes Odd Job, Job Lot?
Odd Job, Job Lot. I always confuse that name, but that's just the
That's
store
why they're
that
not a sponsor today.
Right, exactly. So, with that said, forgive me, Odd Job, Job Lot. So he goes there and shops for a lot of, you know, oddities, actually.
What does he buy? Give me an example.
Well, the last time I was at their house, and he had spoons, and he was looking for spoons, and he bought teaspoons and tablespoons and just spoons, and he really, I'm telling you, didn't really need spoons. He's bought coffee cups, mismatched coffee cups, because he thinks it's just, they're great buys. He buys these shirts that they're Italian-made shirts. And honestly and truly, you know, they're there for a reason because, you know,
okay,
interesting.
So there are stores whose business model is no one else wanted it at the full price, so therefore we buy the odd lot, and we sell them. And people
and
will buy things
because
it's a bargain. Absolutely.
Yes.
Nikki, how about you?
Well, I always say that because I'm Greek, so I'm European, and I'm raised a certain way. I mean, I come from an upper middle class family, but my father always felt that the only time we go shopping is when we're actually buying something. So I was not, and advertising is not as heavy as in Europe as it is here in the United States. So I never went out shopping unless I had a purpose.
Okay.
So if people buy the way I'm buying, there's a lot of people will go bankrupt because I just buy.
So you buy what you need.
When I need, and I don't go shopping just to go shopping.
So you're not a recreational shopper.
Not at all.
Okay.
All actually, right. I dislike shopping.
See, that's interesting. Recreational
for a woman, that's
shopper. Right.
Yeah. You know, it is a very interesting. I was thinking of the last few things I bought, and I've been on a budget for as long as I can remember. So always, if you need it, you buy it. Like, oh, I don't have any money for a new furnace. But if the furnace breaks, suddenly you find the money for a new furnace. So the last thing I bought that I think is major is a gym membership. To change gym membership from something else. And we're not saying that buying things is bad. And we're not here to talk about that we shouldn't shop and we shouldn't purchase items. But it is interesting that sometimes we buy things and then we come home and we open the bag and we go, am I even going to use this?
Right.
And sometimes we are affected by marketing and advertising that we see. And the purpose of today's show is not for people not to buy things, but for all of us to understand a little bit of the psychology that goes advertising so that we can finish watching a commercial. And if our first instinct is, gotta have that, we can at least go, okay, wait a minute. Why do I think I have to have it? Do I buy into the reality of that or not? And is that true for me?
Understand why, you know, just to understand why we spend. Yeah. What is it? What are the triggers for why we spend?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Charles Revson is the founder of Revlon Cosmetics, is widely quoted as saying, in our factories, we make lipstick. In our advertising, we sell hope. So when you think about that, the makeup industry really needs to buy into any insecurities that women have, that they don't look good enough, that their lips aren't red enough, that our eyelashes aren't long enough to be loved.
Well, I don't particularly feel that we can talk about insecurity. I think it's making you feel better. I mean, I don't know. I don't look at advertising necessarily hitting on your insecurities. It's just trying to make you look better, feel better. A woman is a woman, and a man doesn't look good with a lipstick on unless it's Halloween, and Halloween is around the corner. But all I'm saying is it's just making you look better, and it's, as women, we're all vain, generally more so than men, I think. David can tell us later how he feels. But I believe that the advertising is geared more towards making us feel better, look better.
I think that,
rather than hitting on insecurities. I don't think so.
We're not here to necessarily destroy the advertising
industry. Or the beauty industry. I mean, we shouldn't really just focus on
that's not what this is about. But this it's about understanding the psychology behind advertising.
Yeah.
Because women throughout centuries have looked better with red lips. It's a fertility thing. Mm-hmm. It's you know, they used to use berry juice, and so it's not. But do we need 64 shades of lipstick? And how do you go about convincing us that we must have the perfect shade out of 64 shades of lipstick if we want to sell more lipstick by having more? That's where it crosses the line between, let me help you feel better,
it's
or
excess,
you feel fine,
yeah,
but let me tell you, you're really not good enough the way you are, so we can sell you things.
Maybe, you know, stepping a little bit out of the beauty industry, as Diana said, and going into, for example, cereal. We have, like, you walking down the aisle and there's like 100 cereal boxes. And I don't know. I don't even know how they taste, half of them, so, or the purpose of those. So going back to Randy's comment of how many choices we have.
Right. And, you know, we go back to why we're spending. And truly, most people are not out spending a large sum of money on something. We're not all out shopping for Rolexes, for example. But Dunkin' Donuts. How many of us stop at Dunkin' Donuts on a daily basis? All the great advertising that Dunkin' Donuts does. Now they're talking about pumpkin spice. It is the fall. So people love to start their day with Dunkin' Donuts because they really think that's, you know, a good way to to begin their day. And if you think about it, just in rough numbers, if you're going through the drive-thru Dunkin' Donuts every single day of the work week, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year minus your 2 weeks vacation, at $3 a day, you're spending somewhere around $700-$800 a year on Dunkin' Donuts. But do we ever really think that's where our money is going?
Mm-hmm.
Not really.
Or why? And you know, look, I like Starbucks coffee, right. And my husband, that's part of my marriage, because I used to be a Dunkin' Donuts girl. Now I'm a Starbucks girl.
Is that the Mets and the Yankees?
Yeah, I think so. You know, different coffees. But, you know, the thing, there are a couple of books that are very interesting and are classics in the field. And we're going to bring David in about 30 seconds, and maybe we'll talk about this a bit. One is The Hidden Persuaders by Vance Packard that came out a few decades ago that talks about the psychology of advertising and how they instill in us, we may like Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and that's a perfectly good reason to go every day. Or we may like the image of Dunkin' Donuts as the family donut shop or something, and maybe that's what makes us go. So there's more psychology to it than we imagine. And then there was a book that came out a while after that called Subliminal Seduction, which was a little more specialized. And but, you know, most commercials that I know, and I voice them as a voiceover actress, are either the other guys are terrible, we're better, or you have a problem, we can fix it with our product, buy it now.
Right.
But there's a lot more to it. So why don't we bring in our, you know, Nikki is a bit of an expert because she has an MBA in marketing. But Dr. David Taylor is a professor of marketing. So his, as a professor, he keeps up on all the latest trends and everything. And he is at Sacred Heart University. And his expertise includes e-commerce and online word of mouth. I mean, advertising is a very different animal than it used to be.
Sure.
Maybe the psychology isn't, but the means of delivering the message is. Consumer self-expression through online social network and consumer relationships. And also, prior to being a professor, worked for 13 years in a variety of marketing roles, corporate and not-for-profit world. So welcome, David.
Welcome, David.
Thank you.
Good to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great.
Among three women.
Brave soul.
A brave man.
Talking about shopping and advertising.
There you go.
Interesting.
Don't run away.
So, you know, you teach, we were talking before the show, and you teach so many topics from online, but let's go to the basics for a minute. So if you have beginning college marketing students, what do you teach them at first that, you know, what makes people buy a product in the first place, and what keeps them coming back for more? Is that too big a question?
No, I don't think so. One of the things that I always start out conversations about marketing by saying is that we think about marketing as just being that advertising piece. And there's much more to it. We have what we call the four P's of marketing, which are product, promotions, place, and price. And all these things work together to form what we call the product offering. And I know we're focusing on advertising today, but in listening to your conversations earlier before I came on, there's all these combinations of things that happen to cause you to buy things. So you're thinking about everything from the product itself, and we talked about that with the beauty products. We have the promotions of it, which is the way that we advertise a product. And the place, even where you buy a product, is going to affect it. So all of these things work together to, in your mind, form an image of a brand and product. And you use Dunkin' Donuts, for example. And what Dunkin' Donuts does is very interesting. They have their advertising campaigns that you mentioned where what is Donut Dunkin' Donuts say as far as their slogan?
I know. I was just trying to think about that, David.
You run with
right.
Run with Dunkin'?
America runs on Dunkin'.
That's
right.
Dunkin', yeah.
And that's their advertising slogan. And so they sort of put that in your head. And in addition to doing that, here in New England, they're everywhere. So the place is a big part of it. You can't turn around without seeing Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah,
and so in our mind, they're just really ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And so you can't escape it. You turn on the TV, it's there. You drive down the street. I have two Dunkin' Donuts within probably a mile of my house. And that's all works together to form the whole offering that we mm-hmm. talk about. So I know we want to focus a little bit on the advertising, but I wanted to bring that into it too, that all these things work together to entice you to buy your Dunkin' Donuts every day.
Is it almost like saturation? I mean, we're just inundated with Dunkin' Donuts on TV, driving by the Dunkin' Donuts. Is it just saturation? And
That's a good point, because in today's marketing environment, much more than in the past, we really are bombarded from every direction with advertising messages, even without realizing it. And I wish I could, I can never remember the name of movies, but there was a movie that came out a couple of years ago that was a romantic comedy. I don't remember who was in it, but the whole thing centered around an ad campaign for Dunkin' Donuts.
No, really?
Yeah.
Wow, I don't remember that either.
Yeah. And it's part of this new trend that we have where we try to put marketing into places where you don't expect it. You think of advertising as being what you see on TV, but in reality, there are entire movies that revolve around products. The Dunkin' Donuts was an example. The
Reese's
movie,
Pieces on E.T.?
That
yes,
was, that
absolutely,
was the original
Randy,
one.
Wow.
Well, M&M's turned it down, I
they
understood.
Did.
Right, so
yes.
That product placement, that's called sneaky advertising.
Yes,
the
same Apple does that a lot. With movies, they bring in so many of their iPads or iPhones
right.
in a movie set.
If you'll pay attention during a
yes.
movie, you'll see that whenever they show a picture of somebody working on a computer, mm-hmm. they'll have a shot where the Apple logo is very central
yep.
in there. And again, these are advertising images that you don't even recognize as processing, but we do. We see them.
I see that as soft advertising because it's just not...
Right.
In your face.
And that's why we do that, because consumers have become much more savvy in the last 20, 30, 40 years. In the TV show Mad Men, you know, the consumers aren't very savvy in there. So they're really more open to manipulation than today's consumers. And shows like this sort of help us educate consumers even farther. But another movie I was going to bring up was The Internship or The Interns. With Vince Vaughn and
I heard about that movie.
Okay.
It came out last summer. I just saw it earlier today on, it was coming out on DVD this week. But the entire movie centers around Google and an internship at the company.
Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah.
And actually on the movie's promotional materials and on the DVD, you see Google is sort of behind there. And, I don't have any insider information on it, but I can pretty much guarantee you that Google paid them something to be there.
To be there, yeah.
And
yeah.
so these are sort of the ways that, I tell my students sometimes that I'm probably going to ruin movies for you, because now that I tell you, you're going to look for them and you're going
right.
to know.
And it's like giving away you. The end of the movie.
Exactly.
Which I'm
right.
famous for.
So we're going to come back in just a second and talk more, but, you know, so we've really started out, interestingly enough, talking about product placement. And what is kind of fascinating is that when you place a product in a movie, and by the way, I have a friend whose job is to do this for a video game. So if you see in a video game a real product, it does two things. First of all, it makes you feel like, oh, I can relate to these people because, you know, they eat Cocoa Puffs too or whatever. But so it makes it look more real, as opposed to mm-hmm. like the Roseanne show. If you remember, everything on her shelf was like this nondescript brand of nothing, as opposed to the Truman movie where they were holding up real brands of things. So it's kind of subtle, but not really, but it also makes us feel like the show is more real because we live with these products as well.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll talk about the more blatant form of advertising, and I'm sure you do ad campaigns with your students. If it were a product, how would you sell it? This is The Life Talk Show.
The Life Talk Show is sponsored by Dynamic Printing at 91 Main Street in Monroe, Connecticut. It's internet competitive prices with a storefront you can walk into. At Dynamic Printing, all your needs can be met. Everything from business cards to booklets and catalogs with that honest and friendly personal service they've been providing since 1994. Local or shipping anywhere. You can call them at 203-459-8762 or simply visit dynamicprinter.com. Dynamic Printing is flexible and they'll help you with the research and advice you need so that your printing needs match your business goals. They're flexible, and they're right there in person. Again, it's internet competitive prices with a storefront you can walk into. Visit dynamicprinter.com for more information or call 203-459-8762. Dynamic Printing, a proud sponsor of the Life Talk Show.
And as we come out of an actual commercial on the Life Talk Show, we are talking about the advertising field and the psychology of advertising. And the purpose of the show is not to turn us off and to ads, but just to understand how they work so we can make educated decisions as to whether we really need something or not. So you just heard a commercial that was pretty much, here's the facts and the benefits of dynamic printing. And they're wonderful, by the way, and we're proud to have them sponsor our show. But I would, you know, part of their sponsoring our show is being associated with our show. If people find our show useful and then they hear the dynamic printing ad, then they will think, oh, well, the girls were useful and Dr. Taylor was useful, and so I bet this is a good product. So it's important to buy time on a show that will attract the kind of customers you want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much to it. But so let's bring you back to, like, your standard commercial, which these days can be heard on the radio or on television or on a billboard or any of those marketing pieces. What do you tell your students first off about how do you get people to buy a product? What's important in advertising? The obvious and the subtle.
Well, I mean, the most obvious thing is to know what the benefit of your product is and what is going to motivate somebody to buy your product, because that's, as advertisers and marketers, that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to satisfy these needs or, in most cases, wants. Mm-hmm. Because we tend to focus right. more on the things that people want versus what they need, because we buy things we need anyway. It's those things right. we want that we want to build into it. So I know we were talking earlier, or you ladies were talking earlier about the cosmetics industry. So you sort of have to know what is the motivation for buying cosmetics. And as you rightly pointed out, you're not saying that our product has these features and it has this color of red and those types of things. What you want to sell is, you're selling beauty. You're selling improvement. You're selling confidence. Because in the cosmetics industry, the sale is that feeling of, I look really good.
Mm-hmm. Feel good. Right. I look good. Yeah.
And yeah, when we look good, we feel good.
Yes.
Or
yes.
when we feel good, we look good.
Yeah.
Okay.
We try to balance these things. Mm-hmm. One of the psychological phenomena that I teach is that we try to keep things in balance. We have this internal drive to balance our thinking, our attitudes, emotions, and beliefs. And so when we have this feeling that we look good and we feel good, we will feel good. We actually do feel good. It makes us feel good about ourselves. If we look like we're happy, we tend to be happy. Mm-hmm. And so marketers can use that to our advantage. And as a consumer, that's good to know that it is true that when you look good, you feel good. And you're balancing these states in your mind.
Okay. Diana?
So you just talked about just, you know, why we make purchases to feel good. Dr. Taylor, can you talk, Nikki and Randy.
We can call you David, right?
You can call me David.
Okay, thank you.
But your students have to call you. Okay.
The students have to call me Dr. Taylor.
Yes. We're very formal around here.
I'm feeling like I'm going to get a grade or something soon.
No. I promise I'm not grading right. you on this.
So Nikki and Randy and I all own our own businesses, and you know, so I'm just curious, because we think about marketing and advertising. And for me, who I have an interior design business, and I'm always thinking about different promotions and why people need my services as an interior designer. Could you talk to us a little bit about techniques used to create urgency for the consumer to buy now? Talk about sales and discounts.
Right.
And are they really sales and discounts?
I mean, because let's face it. I so appreciate what you do, but redecorating your home is not in Mahler's survival hierarchy
yeah,
of
right.
need.
Yeah. It's not urgency.
It's not a must have.
Right.
And yet it does make us feel good. Yes. So it's not in the survival quadrant.
Yes. Right.
How do you set? So it's not something people say, oh my gosh, I must have my house painted. or redeck. I need new furniture when my old couch is perfectly comfortable.
Right.
So you're selling a different thing than someone who's selling, bread.
Well, that's, I was just going to say, a different thing because it's more of a luxury item more other than, rather than a necessity.
It's a necessity, right.
And also, there's a different way to look at it. There's the intangible product as opposed to the tangible. So right. So those things also come into play,
and,
too.
And your field, what you're going to be selling mostly is the intangibles.
Absolutely.
You're not selling a wall color, or you're not selling a piece of furniture.
You're right. selling a feeling.
The service.
A feeling
service.
And a lifestyle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why we watch HGTV and those home redecorating shows, because we like to look and we like to picture ourselves in these environments. And what you're really selling in the interior decorating industry is a feeling of, this is my surroundings, this is my life, this is my lifestyle. And if you try to take the basic approach of I'm selling you a granite countertop, I'm selling you an appliance, that doesn't really work. What works is, can't you see yourself in this kitchen sitting around this countertop with your cup of coffee, with your friends, chatting about the day's events? Don't you feel comfortable here? Don't these colors make you feel warm and happy?
Warm and fuzzy.
So so if I were to approach it, you know, from the standpoint, you know, as at, and looking at my clients or the people that I want to purchase my services, how can I create that urgency? You know, why does that client need my services now rather than, you know, after the holidays or next year?
Well, one way you can do it is you can play on things that are coming up. So now the holidays are right around the corner. So you can say you're going to have family, you're going to have parties, you're going to have all these things happening. So you only have so much time before you can get it ready for the holidays. So do it now.
So take that wallpaper or that paneling down now because it's dated.
Right. No, you don't want your Christmas party guests seeing that paneling.
But I think something that creates urgency, and David, I want you to comment on this, is when you and so often we see people give you a special window of opportunity that they give you, like, you know, between this day and that date, we give you a 20% off before the holidays, or we give you a coupon that you can redeem, or if you spend over this much money, we give you a discount. These are all incentives that immediately create urgency and make you act now, as opposed to...
Yeah,
David.
Right. The offer should always have an expiration date, because that creates that sense of urgency.
Yeah.
Even though, and I do it myself, I go to Home Depot and I know that they have their 0% financing offer for a certain amount of time. I know in my mind that it will be offered again in a few weeks, but I'm very conscious of when it ends, and I'm probably going to go make the purchase that I'm sort of on the verge of buying.
On the fence, yeah.
I'm on the fence about it. So there is that sense of urgency that does come from that expiration date. And even if we know that that you're going to have another coupon coming out next week, we still, just by having that expiration date, it creates that sense of urgency.
Is that like impulse buying? Like, it's, you know, that point of purchase, that POP, it's right there.
That's a little bit different. That's sort of placing things strategically that cause you to buy.
Especially, I think now when Diane mentioned that, and David, I'm thinking about when you go on the line and you wait to check out the supermarket. They have all kinds, and I always get something. Now,
you know what those are called?
POPs, point of purchases.
Or impulse items.
Items, yeah.
And I would be like, God knows, I don't need another bag of potato chips. But I would be like, yeah, well.
Oh, I'm not sure where I put my nail clipper. Oh, look, here's one.
Right. Yes, there you go. Yes.
Batteries. I can always use some batteries.
Right, it's true, isn't it?
Well, there are a few really, really basic techniques that, you know, I created a speech, a presentation that I was teaching to seventh graders. Very, very basic. And then I taught it to adults later on, called Talk Back to Your TV, which is not to say don't believe anything you hear, but just figure out why they're doing what they're doing. So here's a couple of things I learned. First of all, there's the get on the bandwagon approach. Everybody's doing it. You should do it too. This worked especially with teenagers who are breaking away from their family and are finding their identity with their peers. And if you get a child loyal as a tweenager or teenager, they often, am I right, will stick with
You're
the
right.
same product for their life.
Mm-hmm.
I buy all detergent, not all, like every
all
detergent.
I dry,
because I like it, I use it. Mm-hmm. Why bother to change? It's very hard to convert a customer. So loyalty being rewarded, this concept of loyalty cards, this concept of, we've always done right by you. Why should you switch? That's one thing. So there's a join the bandwagon approach. And just, you know, if you see a commercial, recognize, you see all these happy people eating garlic flavored Doritos or whatever. I don't think that is a thing. Okay, Doritos.
I just went, ew. Sorry, Randy.
No, it's a garlic and herb Triscuits
is what I'm thinking about.
But please, my son would so like the garlic flavored Doritos. But at any rate, if you look at a product there's a lot of concepts like Triscuits, I love. Then they've expanded them into all these flavors of Triscuits. Now I'm confused. I just want to find the regular ones because I'm loyal to that. So there's the join
and
the band.
Used to that.
And we're used to and,
yeah.
and we like what we're used to.
Yeah.
And so there's loyalty, but when people are younger, this celebrity is using it, or everybody,
mm-hmm.
you'll be cool if you use it, that
yeah.
kind of thing. It just know that that's a technique they're using on us. And the question we can say is, mm-hmm. does my coolness depend on having this brand of boot or not? And if you're a teenager, it might. But
yep.
if you're an adult, it might not.
And also advertising.
We like to think they won't, but as adults, we like to be part of it.
Yes,
crowd.
We do.
Yeah, but also, if you guys go back 20, even 30 years ago, I don't remember too many celebrities doing ads. Now it's just every other ad is a celebrity advertising something.
Well, there's two kinds. There's the testimonial, and there's the, is that Michael Douglas voicing? Like, this more like, I'm Brad Pitt, and I use this product.
Well, so, David, can you talk about that a little bit? Like, if celebrity or somebody, an image, and us relating to that or wanting to connect to that celebrity or that image.
Yeah, there's a couple of different varieties of that. The first is sort of the celebrity appeal, where you have someone whose authority comes just from being a celebrity. So you have, like you said, Brad Pitt.
In Japan, because he doesn't do
or
that.
Calvin or Calvin Klein. Didn't he do Calvin Klein or something?
Or
Diane Keaton, the celebrity spokesperson for commercials. Or okay.
Yeah.
Or Paris Hilton did an ad for Hardee's. So
yeah.
they have no particular reason why they should be a good endorser for that product.
No.
But we tend to, that tends to work because we, number one, we take advice from people that we like. As celebrities, we tend to think of celebrities as being our friends if we like them.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, we tend to transfer the good qualities of that person onto the product. And that was the it's sort of the joke, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV,
mm-hmm.
Advertisement, where we sort of just by way of this person portrays this type of person. Wilford Brimley, the older guy who now I think advertises diabetes equipment, he's sort of grandfatherly, so we sort of take the advice there. And then we have the person who has some sort of expertise. Tiger Woods is one of the classic examples. Nike brought him in
Absolutely.
When they went into the golf field. And they do have some expertise, so you pay attention to Tiger Woods because he's a golfer, and if he says that he uses Nike golf clubs, and we all know that we'll be Tiger Woods if we use the same product.
But with that said, on that same vein, how quickly advertisers dropped him.
Right.
Because
well,
of what
is,
he
yeah,
what
that's
he had
a, yeah,
done.
That
right?
is another, I think,
so celebrity
chapter.
Endorsements can
yeah.
can be a double-edged sword.
They can go downhill.
Because they're humans
after.
And they make mistakes. And,
right, so, and that's part of
because
the...
Because they're role models.
Right.
In
so that's part
case.
Of the, the cool people are doing it. If you do it, you'll be cool too, whether that cool person is a celebrity or a beautiful model.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something a little more subtle, which is the, it's called bridging associations. So as we grow up psychologically, if we have happy times in a blue room, we're going to associate the color blue with happy times, and we won't even know why we choose blue. It's just there. They're bridging associations that bridge us from one experience to another. And so these days, a lot of times, you will see the more clever commercials, which is just a happy family in a Subaru, or I don't think it's Subaru, but in an SUV, and they're laughing, and the brothers and sisters are like needling each other, but hugging in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the very end, they'll be like, this SUV, whatever brand it is, for happy family time. brands. And really, they've told us nothing about the product, nothing about what it costs.
Yeah, but
about,
it provoked that feeling, yeah.
Right, so we're going to associate. Mm-hmm. And if you look at Super Bowl commercials, which we all look at as entertainment, and you look at things and it just makes you laugh. And then they just show the product at the end, you're going to associate laughter with that product. Is that an effective form of advertising?
For some kinds of products, it is. It, usually, and your first example you used was a car. And so normally cars are a little bit different in that we look for products and features and product attributes for them. But we also have, we think of cars as being more than cars. We think of cars as being image. So if someone is driving a minivan, there's this very specific type of image that comes from there. And there was an ad campaign a while back. Yes, there was an ad campaign a while back where they were talking about they had a family who didn't want to be the minivan family. And so they tried this other type of car.
There's a stigma to that, I
believe. There is. And on the flip side, there's certain type of cars that sell sex appeal and prestige. So cars are one of those products.
Lexus especially, I think it hits on.
Any kind of luxury car will.
Luxury,
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing where I would love to be a fly on the wall in an ad agency sometime because they have to figure out, they have to segment the market. Meaning, okay, we have a brand of dog food. It's really the same as this other brand of dog food, but how are we going to make it seem different? Now, we're not selling to the dogs. If you own a dog, you know they pretty much eat anything.
Absolutely.
So you're selling to the owners and cat food. I have two cats, so because I love dogs too much to own one because I'm never home. So I have cats, and honestly, cats don't care about variety. They don't need you to have, they just want their food. They don't care about variety. They don't care about fancy feast or the label. It's you're selling to the owners. So like a dog food company, they would have to figure out who they're selling to first. So you talk about demographics. I know this is like a crash course in a whole semester,
but. Right. Your segmentation that you talked about, what segmenting a market is that you take all dog owners, we'll stick to that example. So you take all dog owners and you split them up based on some attributes. And as you said, we don't split them up very much according to dog, although we do a little bit because I've lately been seeing they have dog food for small dogs, which have smaller bites. So you can segment according to a lot of things, but
We all need smaller bites.
Well, unfortunately, my dogs eat a lot of the small bites, so it doesn't help.
Yeah.
They're no better than people.
But doesn't it make the small dog owners feel special?
Yeah.
Like, I bought this special thing for my special dog.
Yes.
Well,
he's small.
Even beyond you feeling special, you feel like the product is special because the product is developed exclusively or specifically for yours. So you feel like this is more targeted to you, and this has attributes that these others don't. So they're the perfect dog food for my dog. Mm. And the dog food, if you go down the dog food aisle, you'll just see that it's segmented in every way. It's for small dogs, fat dogs, old dogs, young dogs.
Dogs on diets.
Right. Right. There's diet dog food. There's gourmet dog food. There's dog food that makes its own gravy. There's dog food that comes in different flavors. And again, as you said, the dogs don't really care that much about it. But we feel like we need to buy a product that is specifically for that dog. And you were talking earlier about laundry detergent. And, you know, think about all the different varieties of laundry detergent we have. And they're all pretty much the same. We can see where probably 50 years ago, there was probably one or two brands of laundry detergent. And now we say we want a laundry detergent that is focused on fragrance.
Environment.
We have
everything, all the green products.
Yeah.
Exactly. And all these are different segments. And that's the way that you can talk specifically to that person, because there's very few products anymore that we can just put out one product and it's going to satisfy everybody. We're just used to buying things that way. If you buy something as simple as bread, there's a whole aisle of bread at the grocery store, and it's segmented based on wheat, white, whole grains, reduced calorie. And so we have this just enormous variety of products, and each one of those has a target market, and we take one slice of it. And as a marketer, we may want to have different offerings that we have for different segments. We may decide we just want to serve one segment, And it makes it a lot easier to market your product that way, because we went back to going back to talking about appealing to that person and their wants and needs. We can do that more easily if we're talking to a specific kind of person who has a very specific need.
Exactly.
I have a funny story to say. When I first came to this country, like a long time ago, my brother took me to a diner to eat lunch. And they're like, I like grilled cheese. So they're like, what kind of bread would you like? And I'm like, what? I said, well, bread, just bread. And the woman is looking at me like I grew three heads. And she's like, well, we have wheat, we have rye, we have this. I'm like, just give me bread. Then she's like, salad dressing. I said, well, I like a salad. So what kind of salad dressing you want? I'm like, I told my brother, I said, I'm stressed already. Mm-hmm. I have so many choices.
So you know what that makes me think about, Nikki? Because you're talking about all these breads, right? So you can go to the grocery store and you go down the aisle with all the breads and there's tons and tons of choices. Now, David, in terms of marketing and the way they lay things out for the consumer, there's certain areas, say in a store and on a shelf, that are more desirable for your product as opposed to another.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The first thing is going to be eye level. Products at eye level, that's the prime space.
Number one, and then the space, actual. Right.
And, because especially space. In the cereal aisle, the kids are exactly at
right.
eye level to the sugary.
You'll find
cereals.
That the kids' yeah. cereals are at the lowest, lower level, yeah, yeah. And the parent cereals are at the top.
And the health cereals are.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Yeah. You get your exercise getting the health yeah. cereal.
And if you do yoga, you can right. do yoga yeah. on your toes.
But I have a quick question.
We'll take a short break and come back.
Maybe after the break, David can answer concerning internet and social media advertising.
Yeah, because it's so much more now than just television and radio, but it's a whole campaign, is it not?
It is. And increasingly, we're seeing that they all fit together. You're seeing that ad campaigns have an online component, they have an offline component, and they fit together. So you'll see an ad on TV, and they'll say, like us on Facebook, and then they'll have a supporting campaign on Facebook. And one of the really interesting things about social media is that it sort of changes the way or changes the roles of the advertisers and the consumer. Because in social media, you have a two-way conversation with your consumer. Traditional TV advertising is a one-way conversation. You talk to the consumer and they don't talk back. With social media, all of a sudden the consumer...
You're getting feedback. Yeah.
You're getting feedback. Well, not mm-hmm. only that, but the consumer becomes part of your message, because the consumer is telling other consumers within there with a like that mm-hmm. now the other consumers can see who likes it. They can see if their neighbor or their friend.
And that's like an inbuilt testimonial.
That's right.
That's the power of...
It is. And it, yeah. and
that's what Facebook has.
Right. And they're,
value.
Yeah, and they're not just talking about it. Mm-hmm. They're part of the ad campaign, both distributing the ad campaign and participating in it. So that's really a big change in the way that we think about advertising.
Okay, this is excellent. We'll finish up with this topic right after this.
Want a high-end kitchen at a low cost? Just turn to Alto Kitchens in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Go where hundreds of architects, developers, and homeowners have found high quality with elegant design, both modern and traditional. Large selection, fast turnaround, quick and precise installation, excellent customer service, and 5-year warranty. Stop in and see 2991 Fairfield Avenue, Bridgeport. Free measuring and 3D layout. For more info and some inspiring pictures, just visit altokitchens.com.
If your son was diagnosed with schizophrenia, would you give up or fight?
One out of every four families deals with a major mental illness.
One out of four.
Mental illnesses rank first among illnesses that cause disability in the U.S., Canada, and
Why
Western
is no
Europe.
One talking about it?
Randy Kay is talking about it. Then Behind His Voices, one family's journey from the chaos of schizophrenia to hope.
There is hope.
Publishers Weekly calls it a must
Available
read.
On Amazon, hardcover, audiobook, and e-reader.
And we're back talking about the psychology of ads and just, you know, that awareness of it so that we can be educated consumers and make decisions based a little bit more about what we really need. We were talking before the break about one of the values of social media and having a whole marketing campaign that includes now Facebook and LinkedIn, not so much for advertising, but Facebook and Twitter certainly, is that the involvement of the consumer and having it be a conversation. And if I can bring you back to an old company that no longer exists, but it was like the Columbia Record Album of the Month Club, or if you think about Books of the Month Club.
Books of the Month,
you know, I read an interesting story, and I'm sure you tell it as a classic, about how they would have these clubs where you could pick, you get like 11 free albums, and then you were kind of signing up to get a free, pay for a free one every month, and if you didn't send the card. Okay. So they weren't doing very well with this direct mail advertising, and we haven't even touched on direct mail, but that's a whole other topic. But when some guy had the idea that, well, we'll just put all the album covers on little stamps and we'll have the consumer go through it, pick the stamp they want, and then sales went through the roof because people felt like they had involvement. It's like, I'm guessing, okay, because I'm not a psychology major or an advertising major, but I do read a lot of ads as an actor. But it's almost like they said, I've already invested the time to look at these stamps, so I may as well send it in. Is that where, like, consumer involvement is important? Have you invested something if you've gotten involved or liked it on Facebook?
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's offline or online, if you can get the consumer involved in it, or just that they have the feeling that they're a part of something. And that's going back to what we were talking about earlier about relationships with brands and how you get these feelings about brands. You feel invested in a product. And we really see it when you change a product. You learn how invested consumers become into your product. A couple of years ago, The Gap changed their logo. Do you remember when they did that? And their consumers went crazy.
No, I just want to say, because what David said is really, really, it hits the spot, because Tropicana orange juice, that was a big fiasco. They got a new ad guy, and he changed the whole Tropicana packaging, and they went way down their sales, because it looked like the basic, you know, how they have the generic products in the mm-hmm. supermarket. Suddenly became that.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, logo and package design is the silent salesperson. That's a really important part of marketing, is it not?
It is, and it's that familiarity that we like. Mm-hmm. And Coca-Cola is a classic example,
sure.
too, no pun intended, mm-hmm. Because they changed their formula, and, you know, people all of a sudden said, wait, you're taking something away from me. All the research showed that consumers like the taste of New Coke better back in the 80s. And so they changed the formula, and consumers just utterly rejected it. So they had to bring it back, and they brought back Coca-Cola Classic. And it's sort of because that the Coca-Cola brand is just synonymous with Americana.
Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah. True.
Very,
like Chevrolet.
So.
Coca-Cola, Chevrolet.
Wasn't
right.
there,
and
you
apple
know,
pie.
I'd like to
and
teach
the, bottle,
the
yes.
world.
Right.
This thing. So, I mean, there's this, you know, if you look at an ad, I think there's the obvious, you know, you have this problem, we can fix it, our product's great, buy mm-hmm. it now, deadline Sunday. But then you have this is what, you know, we want to just increase the awareness of the more subtle tricks. Like, I'd like to teach the word world peace. What does that have to do with Coca-Cola? Absolutely nothing. But by showing us these international choruses of smiling children singing about world peace and then showing the Coca-Cola logo, that gets us underneath in a place that we're not even aware.
Subtle. I like what you just said, subtle. What
yeah.
about subtle advertising?
Yeah. And that's increasingly advertising is getting more psychological and I would call it more sneaky. But if we're aware of it, we can say, okay, mm-hmm. wait a minute, just because that happy family is in that SUV, you know, where are the statistics about is that SUV still on the road 10 years after it's sold? Like, what do I really want? It's subliminal advertising. So just to be aware that some of the things they do is, you know, join the bandwagon, do what the cool people are doing, mm-hmm. complimenting the consumer. Oh, you've made a great decision.
Right.
Right. And look
yeah.
how you said, oh, you changed my Coke. Like, we identify with the products we
yeah.
use. Why is it so important to wear a Prada, whatever? You know, you make sure you have the label outside and showing when you put it over the chair. On Sex and the City, they were all about their Manolos and, you know, Jimmy Choo shoes. And I wouldn't know a Choo shoe from a Tom McCann. I, you
right.
know, honestly, if I like it,
Tom McCann, is that a blast from the past? Wow.
Does that still exist?
No.
So last time I bought
Randy.
Shoes.
So says the shoe girl.
No, No, but
see how you identify with your shoes, and I'm like, is it comfortable?
Right.
I have a question with for David about the internet. I'm very interested where we're heading. What is the future of advertising? Is it going to be the biggest mall in the world, the internet, we're heading that way, and what are the pros and cons?
I think we're already seeing that the internet has made the internet is the biggest mall in the world because it becomes part of our decision making. Now we are educated consumers. I would say that's the biggest change that it's made. That when we go now to buy a car, for example, we've gone to KellyBlueBook.com, KBB.com, or one of the other sites. And we've looked up to see what the rating is, what we should pay for it. And that's a big change. In the past, you went to the car dealer and you knew the sticker price and that was about it. So we have much more educated consumers these days, and they can compare comparison shop often in the store. One of the big problems that retailers are having now is that people take their smartphones into a store and it's called showrooming. You use Best Buy or another retail store as the showroom, swipe it with your mobile phone, and you get competing prices.
Oh my gosh.
I always
through the barcode, is that what it is?
Yeah, it uses the barcode and you get prices.
I see that as a positive, David.
As a consumer you see it as a positive.
But not as the retailer. That could be detrimental for the retailer.
But again, someone has to support that retail store. Somebody has to pay the bills for that physical store. And the reason that Amazon or one of the online retailers can sell it for cheaper is because they don't have that physical space. So the dilemma that we have in the from the advertiser side and the retailer side is, how do we do that? How can we compete against somebody who is using our facilities as a showroom and they make the sale? And they do things like have pickup in the store and they'll match prices. Some of the retailers will match Amazon's prices.
Or they sell the expertise of their salespeople, or the shopping experience, or the convenience, or the return policy. They have to fight back. It's not always about price.
Right.
Because sometimes if it's $2 cheaper 2 miles away, I'm not getting back in the car. Like, I need this now, or I don't want to wait till tomorrow. Price isn't everything, but they have to address it.
They do have to address it. And again, it's good from a consumer standpoint because it does have some downward pressure on prices, and it allows you to know if you're getting a good deal or not, if you're willing to put the time into
it. But it has an impact on the retailers because the bottom line. But what do you think is the future for retail? We're not going to have stores anymore?
I think we have to have stores.
I think so, too.
You know, it's just the question is, what will the store look like? What is the revenue model?
Like, walk in.
Right. And I don't really know. Yeah, it's something that the retailers are really struggling with right now, coming up with an answer to it. And, you know, some of the things you can do is do things like beef up on expertise, have knowledgeable salespeople. Again, make that connection with the consumers so that when they think about that product, they think it's better to deal with you, the person they know. And you know, back in the day, we dealt directly with shopkeepers, and we felt that personal connection. And really, I think that's what we're getting back to, and just in a different way. And that's sort of what marketers try to do, is form these relationships. It's just now we're forming relationships with millions of people versus the people on the block.
Right. Absolutely true. So this is so fascinating. And one last point I want to make, and then we have our final tips. And that is that this isn't about not wanting things. It's not about not enjoying things. It's not about not buying things. It's about being aware of the way an ad may make us think we want something that if we even just wait a week, we might not want. And this extends to our children as well. When I think about raising my kids and how many toys, if I've just said, if you still want that in 6 months, we'll buy it, how many toys would never have been bought? Because, and this is from 2001, and so we're going back 12 years, but the average American child 12 years ago could view as many as 40,000 television commercials a year. Children as young as three recognized brand logos. I remember being in a store and there were 2 3-year-olds and Crocs were very big, and she turned it over. She goes, "Oh, these aren't real Crocs." She was 3 years old and she wouldn't buy those shoes. And that young children are not able to distinguish between commercials and TV shows. Right. And so it's not, you know, just to make ourselves aware, make our children aware. You don't have to say no, mm-hmm. but it's just like, what are they trying to tell me? What message are they using to tell me? And what do I really believe? And with that, that would be my final tip.
Yeah.
My final tip would be, ads are not terrible, but they do serve a good purpose. But just ask yourself, how are they trying to reach me? And is that my truth before you open your wallet? Diana, your last tip?
Having a family and children in school, and there's family budgets, and having to pay back debts like education, I just found this nice website. If people want to check it out, National Consumer Finance Foundation. It's a website for helping you to set up a family budget and ideas for paying back debt.
Great. Nikki?
I just want to say, separate the want and the need and know what it is that it's important and matters.
Okay. And any last words from our wonderful guest?
I want to put in a plug for a program that we have at Sacred Heart University. We've
Super.
Talked a lot about social media and digital marketing, and we actually have a master's program at Sacred Heart. If anybody is interested in that, we do have a master's program where you can learn all that you ever wanted to know about online marketing.
I love it. Love it. Can you take individual courses? Do you have to take the whole master's program?
You can take even individual courses, but
then you'll want the master's.
It's set up for the full program.
Okay. And that is the future. Thank you so much. This
Thanks,
has been David. The Life
Thank
Talk
you.
Show.
You've been listening to The Life Talk Show on WDJZ AM. If you have an idea for a future topic, would like to be a guest or a sponsor of our show, or just tell us what you think, please email us at info@thelifetalkshow.com. Our Twitter handle is @LifeTalkShow, and our Facebook page is The Life Talk Show. Sharing ideas for meaning, joy, and success. The Life Talk Show with Randy, Diana, and Nikki on WDJZ AM every Saturday at 4. The Life Talk Show. Join us.